Blueprint by Breaking and Entering is a deep dive into various topics within marketing communications, all with the lens to help you break in and or thrive in advertising. And perhaps you might even laugh and learn along the way. Episodes can range, right? It can be detailed conversations, solo commentary, question and answers, trend analysis, ads of the week, really anything. Blueprint episodes can range from 5 minutes in length to 5 hours, and if you find a subject you are especially interested in, listening can be extremely valuable. And hey, if it's not your cup of tea, feel free to send this to someone who would find value in listening. Today's Blueprint is all about advertising an ad agency. Ty Gates is the communications director at Mother USA. It's essentially the same role I have at Havas Chicago. So if you listen, you will learn the basics of how to break into agency communications, agency PR, new business, and all those adjacent roles which we cover. And about Ty, hailing from Long Beach, California, Ty Gates is a communications director at Mother. He started his career in both tech and entertainment PR before venturing into advertising. Chill mentality might be the best way to describe him, but if you mention anime or tattoos, then he won't shut up. And I love talking with Ty on the first episode of Blueprint. If you have any content suggestions, I would love to hear. The best way to contact me is on LinkedIn, or you can DM our Instagram account. Connect with me, send me a message on LinkedIn. That's the best way. Now on with the show. This is the Blueprint podcast by Breaking and Entering. And as usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. All right, we're live. Ty Gates, welcome to the first ever revamp of our Blueprint segment. It was kicked back years ago. Now we're repurposing it, bringing it back to life. More so conversations, deep dives, conversations with people. What I kind of want to gear this towards, Ty, is we have the same role at different agencies. Yep. So maybe we should dive into the comms role within agencies. You're a comms director at Mother USA. Is that correct?
That is true.
And yeah.
That's the full gamut too. So Mother Design, Media by Mother, Mother LA.
Media too, you do.
Yeah, a little bit.
I love it. And I do a similar role. I just got growth added to my title, but I've been doing comms for the past 2 years at Havas Chicago. I did a little bit of Havas North America. So like our Boston office and our New York office in general, like high level comms, but now I'm back down to Chicago. So
yeah.
What do you
think about the, about growth being added? I kind of like that.
I'm pumped. And you know, I have to think about, and I'm sure you're thinking about this too, and everybody listening should be thinking about, what is close to the last title you'll ever have? And the way my boss, Myra, kind of pitched it was, you know, you can stick down the comms route and you can be a chief creative officer, you can be a global communications officer at the end of your career. If you just want to go comms route, you can do that. But if you add growth to your title, that also opens up the path to being a chief marketing officer for an agency. So now I kind of have like that split trajectory, and I like the idea of being a CMO of an agency. How about you? Like, is that like, do you think about like CMO that? Like, are you tracking that in your career?
Yeah. I think I've always wanted to be a CMO since I mean, when I graduated college, I majored in journalism when I went to college. And then when I graduated, I was kind of like, I'm decent at writing. But for whatever reason, I love that CMO title. I think it's just because I know I like meeting people. I like connecting dots. So it was kind of like this, you know, you see the CMOs and all the trades. The CMOs are kind of who I guess agencies are really pitching. You know what I mean? Like, that's who you're trying to talk to. And I was like, oh, what does a CMO look like within an advertising agency?
It's different.
And that, yeah, exactly. It's way different. And when I worked at No Fixed Address, I met Katie Newman, who is the CMO of all
she's
that.
She's supposed to be amazing. You know,
well, she's incredible. She's incredible. And I was just like, that's whatever that job, that CMO, whatever that looks like, that's what I want to do at like the back end of my career.
Right. And I guess maybe let's kind of understand and like kind of tease out what we think that is, because I'm still early on. But what is the difference between a CMO of an agency versus, let's start off with brand side, like of a CMO of Pepsi, let's say, like I'm thinking like top. Capital.
Yeah.
Let's kind of delineate those real quick.
Yeah. I feel like a CMO brand side, you obviously oversee the entire like marketing portfolio, but at the end of the day, everything you're doing is to drive, be it awareness, sales, whatever that kind of remit is.
They're really funnel focused about their product and their suite of products, consideration as well. 100%. And that's, to me, it seems like that route, you definitely probably have to go to a business school. You have to get your MBA. You need to like have that business acumen and that true marketing essential, like those foundational four P's. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And then I've just been like wondering what does the CMO, it's happening too across agencies. We're starting to see CMOs kind of pop up at agencies, and it's like, okay, so what does that world look like? Because at the end of the day, agencies, unless you work somewhere like, you know, that sells product, it's like, what is that kind of focus going to be for you? Obviously, it's to grow the awareness of the agency, but you can get pretty funkadelic, I feel like, as a CMO of an advertising agency, because you can do whatever, you know, at that point, you're a creative company. You can do creative things, but we'll see what it looks like in the future.
I think another thing is, getting just new business is probably the biggest success factor, KPI, if you will, of an agency CMO position. It's like, are you getting new business in? Are we attracting new interesting clients, growing revenue? I think those are also pretty important. Mm-hmm. So maybe there are some parallels, but it's more so of getting those new clients, I feel like.
Yeah, clients most definitely. I also, one of the things too, I just been thinking about, like, is as a CMO, like, the day I become a CMO agency side, I'd love to become mother CMO years down the line because I love it here. I would like to also really flip the way that like we go about doing recruiting and like where are we kind of showing up? Because that matters, right? Like it's, I didn't really know. I remember talking about this. I didn't really see anyone that looks like me when I was in college of like, what is this role that I want to do in my career? And it'd be cool to kind of show up at colleges, show up at these kind of niche community events, be it like an anime expo, and kind of find those kids that are like, well, I like to, you know, I like to write, I like to draw. And it's like, oh, you might want to have a career in advertising. Come meet us. Come see what this looks like. You know, the philosophy college student that's like, I question the world. It's like, oh, you're a strategist. You should come. Right. Come explore what strategy means in advertising. You might really enjoy it.
I like that. And as well, if the agency is producing great work and you've kind of made a name for yourself as a good CMO does, it should catch the attention of all audiences. And we've seen that with Mother. We've seen that with some smaller shops too that have been really kind of like disrupting, I guess, and gathering attention, and therefore like it should in theory attract better employees and new, like higher internship ratings and higher internship applications. I always get curious though, do you think it's the role of the CMO to do that, or is that recruiters, is that HR, or is it both?
I think it's a blend. I mean, I love using food analogies because I worked in an Italian restaurant when I was in high school or it was in college. So it's like, I really like everyone being involved to kind of get that beautiful dish out. So obviously it can fall under one person's job description. That's like their, you know, 80% of it is their role, their job to kind of complete. But it takes a lot of people involved. It can't just like rest on one person. And like, you never really, you don't really realize just how close you are to something that you want by association to like the people you work with. That I think that's kind of what I'm just realizing the more I grow in my career. It's like, oh, you know, so-and-so, I know so-and-so. Now we're all three of us are talking. Now we're all friends. Now there's some sort of business opportunity kind of manifesting from this weird relationship that we never really realized was there. Right. And it's kind of, that's like the cool part about it where it's like, oh yeah, this is the 3 degrees of separation are very much, I don't think people put much thought to it, but it's so true. It's very creepy how close we all are when you think of it.
I love that. That's why I love LinkedIn so much.
Yeah, same.
So I'm there with you. So I think let's get back to where we're at right now. You're comms director at Mother. I guess, you know, we have similar roles. What does that mean? I guess I don't interview comms directors at agencies because, as we know, there's only a select few that do it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one in Chicago here. I mean, our North America team, there's not many like for Havas.
Yeah.
And most agencies, you know, have 1 to 10, I would say, comms professionals.
Yeah, 100%. There's not too many. My manager, Marianne, she's by herself for like 8 months. And then
she was just hyping you up before this, actually. She messaged and said, let's read it live. She was complimenting you. Ty is the best, such a great hire and a godsend. And I'll end the quote there. I think that's...
That's so nice. So nice of her. Shout out Marianne. So the role.
Yeah, let's dive into it.
Man, it's interesting. It's the work, obviously, right? The things we make on behalf of our clients that needs to be shared with the world. That's a big focus, right? So when you think about that, apply that times four, because I have Media by Mother. I have, you know, we have Mother Design, LA Mother, New York Mother. So that's the work. Then you kind of, that trickles down to awards, right? The byproduct of what we create on behalf of our clients. So that's a full beast in itself. Award season, as you know, it's very, it's a lot, man. You gotta stick in it and grind it out. It's gonna beat you up maybe.
But what pulls me out of that is knowing that we're advancing careers, we're advancing the agency when they win these awards. I personally love when I can get somebody pitched or featured or win a solo award, because it's going to directly help them get a pay raise, get promoted. So that's like kind of like how I kind of keep the light at the end of the tunnel, if you will.
Oh,
but
yeah,
it sucks. 100%. It's a pain because these things are crazy. You have to enter every credit. There's a million credits to it. You have to understand the narrative and the background. And sometimes there's poor onboarding. You don't understand what the campaign is actually about. And you gotta win a award, a DNAD, a line.
Yeah.
So you have to like tap the right people too.
Yeah. And it sucks on that note. It sucks when like I've had this happen in the past. Just the team that was part of the campaign no longer works there. So then you're kind of like, oh, wait, I don't have a strategist. I don't have a creative. I don't even have a PM that was involved in this. So we're just kind of pulling from old decks. What does this look like? We're not telling the story, right? Because we weren't there, but we're going to try our best to kind of regurgitate it from what we gathered.
And I think on my show, the main show, Breaking and Entering, like the traditional interviews, every single guest has won 50 plus, like, there are some guests that have won like 100+ Lions, and I'm like, oh, like that's awesome. Like, that's great. Like you did like a bunch of great creative work, but I'm like, poor, like whoever your comms coordinator was, cause really they're doing a lot of great stuff behind the scenes too. And I know a lot of work goes into that from all these different departments too. It's not just, oh, we submit. It's not, I think to demystify this, it's super important for anybody that wants to go in comms. It's not like CAN or DNAD or Clio. It's not like they're scounging around the world and finding the best ads and then just selecting the best ads, which you know, I think that's a fair generalization. Maybe some people think that, oh, they just find online like what ads they liked and then they pick them. Nope. Yeah. No.
Yeah. It's usually, I mean, you got, there's that whole jury factor in it where it's like they, you know, they kind of, they might've been immersed in it. They might've seen the work that they're judging just by chance, which is always awesome.
But there's a lot, you know, you have to create a bunch of materials. You have to create a case study that's 2 minutes, and a lot of money goes into those case studies too. It's retelling the story and then submitting their entry requirements, long PDFs, identifying the right category where there's 100 plus categories now. And it makes sense because they make more money. You know, it's not cheap to like enter these awards. So they have a bunch of different categories.
It's a beast,
but it's worth it.
It comes with the, I've been a part of work that has won awards, but I've yet to actually hold like a one show pencil or a can line yet. I still haven't. I've seen them around the office, but I've never, you know, places I've worked, but I've never actually grabbed one to just see if I have like, if it's just like, you know, what I assume to be what it feels like to hold a Dragon Ball. It's like, oh God, this is majestic.
I have, but that was because the person before me, I started 2 years ago, they submitted CAN, which is like the first in the award cycle for this particular campaign. And then it won at CAN. And this is interesting too. If it wins at CAN, you can kind of assume in the award show cycle that that work is going to win at the later on award shows. Leah, I think, is after. I might not get these dates right, but like there's Leah, there's One Show, there's DNAD that come after. So when I was here, I got in and they were in this midst of the hype, won two Cannes Lions. But I had all those materials already. So then I kind of kept on just regurgitating the same similar copy. And then it ended up winning a pencil and some Leah's. So I can't really take credit for that, but my name was on it, I think, somewhere. But
I think a lot of people on the awards front, I feel like some people, it sounds overwhelming, right? Like it sounds like you just named 8 award shows.
There's five big ones that really matter.
And then you could do small ones too, but when it comes to kind of what goes into the process, you don't need to really stress out about all the writing. Cause once you've told the story and you feel like you've told the story as accurately and as like simple as possible, you can very much kind of reuse those prompts across.
You get a copywriter to help you. For me, I kind of treat it as I think an underrated skill for communications in an agency is project management. And 100%. You need to get really confident really fast. And for me, it was at the very beginning, getting down the internal communications and knowing every single person in the office and knowing what clients they work on and what work they do. I took a lot of time, even before I thought about external, I made sure that I knew everybody. So then I could then tap them and get the right help and be a better project manager. And that confidence, especially for me being kind of young in my career, establishing those relationships early on is super helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I credit everything I'm good at when it comes to this role is that I worked externally in PR agencies before I actually came in house to an agency, which is a whole nother beast.
Cause it's different. Cause if you work at a PR agency, you're all external, right? You're just a PR person and you're getting those media lists. And I started at Edelman. Where did you start?
I started at Zeno Group,
which is a part of Edelman. I think it's a sister company it's in the same holding company
out in San Francisco. So I started in tech, but if I didn't have that experience, I wouldn't be where I'm at. Honestly, it teaches you so much about what comms is. Like I know people, I gave a talk at a college and they were like, oh, well, I really want to go to like a brand first. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, cool, you know, but you're going to really need that experience on the other side. Cause it's a different beast, man. It's a different beast when your billings are, it's monthly. You got to hit certain KPIs. You need to learn how to talk to executives, and it's different talking to executives that you work with versus talking to executives that pay the bills when you're external.
Cause we got it made in the agency. Like I can speak for myself. I'm trying to speak with clients more so, but really I'm talking to the same account leads internally at Havas. I'm not like, you know, the account leads take care of the communications for now with the clients, but we kind of got it made, and it doesn't start there. Like, you can't just walk into that. I feel like unless you intern and you do a really good job, you can do internal communications and then transfer over. It's not impossible, but I kind of like this hovering here to do communications, internal, external, for an agency. It is super beneficial to start off in, I call it like boot camp.
It is. It's 100%.
That's a PR camp. Agency. And Edelman, you know, I love Edelman. I love what they did for me. I was there for 5 months, and that was, it was because of the pandemic, and no shade there. I was working in the same bedroom that I grew up in. Moved back out of college, right in the heart of quarantine, March 2020. I think I started and I learned from these people are machines in the best way possible. They know how to do PR externally. They have the system, the formula. They are dialed in. They've been doing this. It's a process, and they got locked in.
Yeah.
They have their SMEs, they know the clients, and they just know how to go. And they own those clients like consumer trades so well.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, I took my first job in San Francisco, and I drove out there to interview there. Like, I couldn't find a job in LA, which is crazy at the time. It was like 2016, 2017, maybe 2015, actually. And I moved to San Francisco just off the strength of like, I'm going to make it in PR, like a super arrogant young.
Why did you want to go to PR?
I took a Myers-Briggs test, and it told me that public relations was like a good career path. And then I was like, what is that? So I watched an episode of Sex and the City. There's some character that she works in PR. And I was like, oh, she just meets people and like hangs out with journalists. All right, let's do it.
It is cool.
And then I love tech, and that's what led me to San Francisco. So I was there for like a year. I was there for like 9 months, 10 months. And then I got swallowed up by the San Francisco beast. And then I moved back home, and I was just like, I don't know if I could handle that city. It's too much for me. It's too expensive at the time. Just like, it was on a horrible salary. Like,
you got to have it there. I mean, especially now. I mean, I've visited it 2 times in my life, and it is beautiful, but I don't think I could do it. I don't think I can make it.
No, it was,
I feel like.
Yeah, you got to go. I don't know if moving out now that hindsight's 2020 now, and I'm like, oh, I took an assistant account executive role at a tech PR agency in 2015. Probably not the smartest move.
What was the position again?
Assistant account executive. So yeah, you know, same account
at a PR agency in San Francisco.
Yeah. So you're like, I'm not making much money. To me, when you add a couple zeros to a paper and you're like, this is your salary, I'm thinking, oh, I'm loaded, you know? And then I moved out there, and I was like, oh, I'm eating Jack in the Box 5 days a week because I have no cash. And my mom's pissed that I keep saying, can I get some money? And she's like, where's your money? And I'm like, oh, it's very expensive to live here. Like,
so you moved back, and what did you end up doing?
Yeah. So I ended up losing my apartment at the time when I lived out there, and I tried to get another apartment, but because I didn't make much money, I kept getting rejected. So I remember asking my boss, who was like, I was like, what, 24? She maybe been 26, right? So we're both kids. I remember telling her like, hey, I think I'm gonna lose my apartment. Like, I can't really afford to live out here. Can I move back? And they had an office in Santa Monica. I was like, can I move back home? And then I'll work in Santa Monica. I'll just commute every day. And they're like, oh yeah, we'll look into it. You know, it never happened. So I ended up having to just quit. I just moved back home one random Friday night, took everything with me. And then on Monday I sent an email to my boss. I was like, hey, I have to, you know, I quit. I can't move back there. I don't have a place to live. So I was unemployed for like 2 months. And then I ended up from there, I ended up getting a job at this, it's not really an agency anymore, but this place called 15 Minutes PR, which is an entertainment PR agency. The founder, Howard Bragman, he actually passed away, like, I want to say this past fall, which sucks. But yeah, that was like, and that's kind of where I started to excel in my career. I think I was like very much angry the fact that San Francisco kind of beat me. I'm really competitive. So I was like, oh, this sucks. And it lit a fire under me. And I haven't really looked back. I still think about San Francisco all the time. Like when I'm having a bad day and no one's responding to my pitch, I'll just be like, remember how hungry you were when you lived in San Francisco? Use that to kind of fuel the fire.
I like that.
A little bit.
I like it. It's like Jordan. Last Dance vibes.
I gotta tap into that, like that young spirit of just like, you were so pissed that you moved.
Make it personal. You should take it personally.
Yeah. I do that a lot in my career. I think that's kind of what has helped me get to where I'm at. Cause I'm just, I hold grudges against myself where it's like, you gotta do better, dude. You gotta do better.
I hear you. So then you did the PR agency route. When did you make the switch to do PR comms? Pretty much the same thing, right? PR and comms. When did you make the switch to do PR comms and a creative advertising agency?
Yeah, that's that was in like 2018, I want to say. I was working at a PR agency that still worked exclusively. We worked with advertising agencies. So I worked with them, and Critical Mass out of Chicago. They're also a Canadian company. They were one of my biggest clients at the time.
What was the PR agency you're working with?
Through that, it was this place called Future Factory.
So they only did PR for ad agencies.
For advertisers. Yeah. So there are actually, for most people that are listening, that like want, if you want to get into advertising, but you don't really understand, but you also want to get that kind of PR agency experience, there's a handful of agencies out there that work exclusively with PR, with advertising agencies. Raven PR, they're out of Nashville. Shout out Matt. That's like, they're great. We used to work with them at Mother. They're
Gennaro. So you can go to them. And a lot of times,
Al Communications, there's hella agencies.
Sweat and Co.
Yep.
We got to be careful though, because they're coming after us.
Yeah,
because how that works is, for agencies that do not invest or they need extra support with their comms and they don't have a fully built internal PR team, what we do, they will externally source, and they'll only do their big launches, or they'll do some smaller ongoing stuff. Essentially what we do, and I don't know how the pricing works out. I don't understand this, like what their scope agreements are, but there are those agencies that will say, hey, like, you let us know when you're launching as an agency, when Mother or Havas is launching something, we'll help promote it. And you don't need to have somebody full-time on salary. That's too
much. Yeah.
And then they have multiple agency clients.
You'll get like that. You'll get that top level experience, which was like dope. So I got to work with Critical Mass.
So you were doing that. You got to work with Critical Mass.
Critical Mass, Jam 3, Media Monks. There, a handful of places kind of came through there. And then I wanted to leave Future Factor. And I remember talking to Critical Mass. I was like, hey, would you guys ever hire me on? And obviously I shouldn't have waited so long to say something, but I did. So then it didn't work out. And I ended up leaving there, and I went back into PR agency land. I went to go do tech PR.
How'd you do that?
I was like, I found this startup, I guess a PR agency startup, but they work with tech startups. So I was like, they're cool. They work with some pretty cool, you know, they worked with some pretty cool startups. And I was like, I'll give tech one more try. You know, like I was still like, I still like tech. Let's do it. I lasted there for like 5 months. Yeah. And then that's when I made the switch to in-house agency side, creative agency side. And I started working at the Mini in Pacific Palisades, which was really dope. So that started the journey. And then from there, I worked there. I worked at Mojo Supermarket.
You worked at Mojo? Nice.
Yeah, I was there.
They're great.
And then now, yeah, I was at mother, down at mother. So yep. It's kind of like, it's, I think once you kind of, when you do make that, like if you want to get into advertising, you make that switch and you want to be a comms person at a creative agency, it's really kind of just finding like where you fit in. Cause some places don't appreciate comms as much as other places. And like some places have big comms teams, some places have no comms teams. So it's kind of like figuring out where works best and also figuring out like who your manager is. Cause that helps like 1,000. Marianne's honestly the best manager I've ever had in my life. Like she's incredible. And that makes the job fun. That makes me want to do great at work versus like when I worked on the agency side, PR agency side, it was just kind of like, you know, they've been burned by their managers. They got a little grudge. It's just a vicious cycle of like, oh,
yeah.
You know, oh, that's because
it's easy. I mean, people have to understand that being in communications or even new business within an agency is traditionally a non-billable role, meaning the agency is paying you out of their own pockets 100% of the time. Whereas an account executive who's working on a client or two clients, their salary is being paid by the client. It's built in their scope. Yep. There's a service fee, whatever it might be. And part of that fee goes in to pay your salary. So they're protected. But you know, if they lose the client, then that's always an issue. And they might have to shuffle around or let people go. Whereas us, we're always being paid by the agency 100%, which is scary. And Doug Zanger, David Greiner, my apologies, Doug Zanger, you're great too. He's the one that actually introduced me to Marianne and said she was one of the best in the industry. So shout out Doug Zanger. Yeah. But David Greiner, who worked at Adweek and Creative Ladder, I'm not sure what he's up to now. I have to check. But
yeah, I think he's still at Creative Ladder.
Didn't he leave?
Pretty sure. He might have. I just talked to him not so long ago, but maybe he left.
Yeah, he might be at Creative Ladder. Let's see. With Ryan Reynolds and Deanna Dorsey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Powerhouse. He's still there. My apologies. I called him up and when I took this job, he's like, just be careful. That's not billable. And it is a good watch out. But what I did was try to make myself as valuable as possible by knowing people, being ingrained in the culture, building the culture up internally. So when there aren't those big tentpole moments and you're staying proactive, you know, there is a need for you. And for me, that was built by showing up 5 days a week in office. That's like my thing. People know to come to me if they want to get something figured out because I have relationships with the tech team, facilities team, the front desk guy. That's how I've kind of mitigated that stress and now developed some dependency. I would like to think, but you never can be too comfortable at all, right? You still got to work hard and prove and do your thing.
Yeah. Can we actually, I want to unpack that a little bit when you mentioned like knowing everyone, you should know everyone. And that I think when you don't have a campaign coming out, maybe you had a campaign launching, like it's February, maybe you had a campaign launching this month, but you're not gonna have another campaign. The agency's not gonna have another campaign launching till like, you know, let's say June, May, right? What are you doing? What are you doing in that meantime? That's when you get in your comms bag. That's when you start figuring out. That's when it's good to know everyone. And it's good to be like, I know who the writers are in this agency. I know who the talkers are in this agency. Because if you know those two groups, you can do so much up until the next campaign. Like, sky's the limit. You can do podcasts. You can have the writers writing a lot.
Individual awards, and it's also good to take a break to chart out and map and like get your calendars aligned. I suck at that. I need like a good just universal calendar of all the tentpole moments.
There's gotta be one.
Honestly, should get out there. You know how ads? Do you have AdSpur? AdSpur is like the awards calendar, and I don't need. It's like this platform that you get a login and you can like, it's okay. It's pretty good. But I think there's a need for like a platform that's for agency PR professionals with everything, all the tentpole, all like the editorial awards, like Ad Age, Ad Week, individual awards, local awards. You can drop down and put your city. We should make that, monetize it, sell it.
That'd be, man. I know a lot of people would appreciate that. I love that.
And then journalists can go in there and upload like what their editorial calendar is. And like, we create like a chat room.
Yeah.
I'm sure that
you use editorial calendars. I do still. I'm old school.
Yeah. I mean, when they send it, like the ad forms, little black books, and like, I check out the Ad Age and Ad Week. I check out their websites to see when their events are.
Yeah. Ed Kauser. Yeah. I learned about them working in PR agency world because it was very much like I did, you know, if you're doing consumer, you're going to be looking like, oh, looks like the Oprah magazine is going to be covering fitness gear.
Right.
In like, you know, in March, let's make sure we prep our pitches to kind of go out there.
Because they're giving you the keys.
Yeah. And all you have to do is, if you have a relationship with an editor, all you have to do is hit them up, text them. Hey, I see in September you're doing this. Can I get introduced to whoever is running the programming or like the editorial for that? Sometimes comms people make the job so much more difficult than it needs to be. And it's like, guys, let's just think. Like, it's just one, two, and then it all starts to fall into place once you really just like slow down the process. And there,
I think time in the market is so important for this job because relatively speaking, the same events happen around the same time every year. The journalists, you know, I'm not sure what the economy is looking like for them, but the journalists stay kind of in that ecosystem. And, you know, there's a handful of comms professionals in advertising, and there's a handful of ad trade journalists in this industry. And you got to make sure that you keep that relationship going and respectful and with etiquette and not screw them and get them pissed at you. And I think that's super important too. But the more you're in this industry, the deeper those connections are, the more that you see, okay, Southwest is this date. Cannes is always in, June 17th through 21st. You start to build that just in your brain and your calendars, and they start to email you. Time in this industry is really crucial. So when you first start, for the listeners out there, you might be stressed. Like, there's so much going on all the time. I'm always behind. I still feel that way. I feel like I'm playing catch up quite a bit. And like, sometimes my boss will be like, hey, did you get this? Can we apply for this? I'm like, oh yeah, let's do it. But it's good. Yeah. This job can be very stressful if your management is putting a lot of stress on you. If they're like, we need to have coverage for this or else, which I'm fortunate I'm not in that position.
Yeah.
But if you have that stress, that's where things can go sour.
Sometimes that stress can be good. Like I said about like working in, I mean, you worked at Edelman, I was at Zenith. Like that stress of a client paying you, let's say $25,000 a month for their retainer, and they're on your ass like, hey, we need five, you know, coverage pieces in a month, and you're just kind of, you're sweating.
It helps. But
if you get, once you kind of understand that tension, you're going to be set for the rest of your career. Cause you're going to, once you go in house, where if it's not in like a creative agency, maybe you go in house with like a brand, you're always going to have that fire on you. I don't even have those pressures anymore, but
you still have it. Like, you're still a little scarred. So when you're sitting around and you're like, you're taking a breath, you're like, what could I be doing? Like,
oh, Fridays, I'm like, oh, wait, I have no meetings today. I should just start.
I made this last night before I was going to, I was trying to sleep last night, and I got my notes app out because this idea came to me. I was trying to craft the perfect work day, and I was trying to come up with an acronym, and I want to get your opinion on this. Like, the perfect work day, I believe in comms, is if you do all these things in some way, shape, or form. You pitch something. You submit something that can be an award entry, that could be like a juror nomination. So you pitch, I guess those are kind of similar, pitch and submit. So pitch, submit, create, that could be social or an event, something internal, like help plan an ERG event. So you got pitch, submit, create, and then plan something in the future, looking at a calendar, like knowing like what the editorial is or an event, or like, you plot something, plan, plot. And then the last thing is recap. which I think is important of like, if you have that free time, what did you earn this past week? What are you like, what did you do past quarter or what'd you do this day? And then like get those metrics from Muckrack and recap what you've done. That's like the perfect work day. I feel like, is there anything you debate on that?
I would add research to it.
I don't like research, but yeah. What does that mean for this?
But like research to me is like, how did you read? You know what I mean? Did you do any reading?
They add like trades and then culture.
That's good. I read a lot and on daily. I feel weird admitting this, but I probably read close to 12 articles.
When do you do it?
Close. So I live in California, but I wake up at 6 because we have East Coast coworkers. So I wake up at 6 just to kind of, if I need to catch up on anything, I'll catch up. But I usually read, I'll try to read an article while I'm getting ready in the morning. And then throughout the day, I'll try to read, you know, if I have a little bit of downtime, give me like 15 minutes to kind of check something out. If I'm on LinkedIn, I always save that beautiful feature of saving. It helps me out so much. I can go back to that. And then, whenever I get like a moment, I try to read just because you'll be surprised how no one reads. First off, a lot of people just don't read. People listen to podcasts and I love listening to podcasts. I love that. I mean, we're doing a podcast right now and it's like, I can listen to that on my commute, you know, but if I can read and actually absorb something and then start to draw connections, that's when you, as a comms person, that's when
what are you reading?
The full gamut. I mean, I love me a little bit celebrity news. I just want to see what's going on in that world. Tech, obviously business. I go on Reddit. I'll just spend a lot of time just scrolling Reddit, looking for something interesting. I always read comments on Reddit. I read comments on YouTube videos. I'm always looking for some weird little insight that can trigger something in my brain where I'm like, that's an interesting perspective. I wonder if there's something there. I want to unpack this. Let me go talk to someone I work with and be like, hey, what do you think about this? You know, like, is there something here?
Right. It helps to be like the expert in news and culture. So when somebody asks you, what do you think of this campaign? Is this thing relevant? Or how can we, like, what's the narrative here? You can then answer. And I like that you're talking about like outside of the traditional ad trades. Cause that's like how you make good ads and like how you tell a good story. You know, you can't just read and talk to ourselves. So that's,
100%. And I mean, like we're going to make an agency is going to make the things it's going to make on behalf of its clients because the clients have a vision. They have,
we're servicing them. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to make like that. But if you are a comms person, If this is good advice, if you're like just starting off or if you're younger in your career, if you're at an advertising agency and you kind of know what world your clients kind of bounce in, right? Say you have like some food brands, say you have, I don't know, hospitality, whatever that world is, you should be looking outside the ad trades to then go make friends with journalists that kind of cover that stuff. Like we have Postmates and Sonic and Mother LA, and I've been hitting up a bunch of food journalists just to kind of make friends with them and be like, I know upfront you're never going to probably cover an advertising campaign. Sometimes they do, right? Yeah. Like you'll see it occasionally, but it's also just like, it's nice to know what the journalist is working on in terms of a trend, because that's a lot of times I feel like we, as comms people at agencies, we kind of forget that trend stories are a thing and our campaigns that our team makes can kind of fit into that trend some way, somehow. You obviously need to like deconstruct it, figure out where it kind of sits within that trend story. But it's so nice being able to text their editor and be like, hey, we're working on this. You have anything else going on in your world that kind of applies to this, that can be sticky enough to kind of attach itself to what we're kind of working on? And can we figure out a great story about this? It doesn't need to be 100% about the brand, you know what I mean? But it can be about the kind of ecosystem that the brand is kind of operating in.
That's genius. Cause I always think like, I think there's, cause it's important to clarify too, that these big brands that Mother works with, Havas works with, you know, most agencies work with these big brands and they usually will have a separate PR agency working on their consumer. So when we say consumer, it's like the ads, it's like the, it's the publications that are relevant to that specific brand. So let's go through some examples. I have a Shure microphone, right? You have a Yeti microphone. So Shure will want to be, and Yeti will want to be featured in Microphone Magazine Weekly or megamics.com blog, and these big influencers that review microphones, right? So they will have bespoke PR agencies that will try to pitch Shure to get in to these mega microphone magazines, right? We're concerned. Well, I was, and now you taught me. I was always predominantly concerned about the ad trades. Where does Havas, where does Mother want to show up? It's usually the ad trades. Mm-hmm. So the ad trades versus consumer. Consumer sometimes is ran by an external agency. So some comms professionals can, you know, within the agency can go under the radar and say, well, the PR agency that is working with Shure or Yeti, they should be focusing on Mega Microphones Magazine. I don't have to worry about that. But you're saying that's not the case. You should go get those consumer editors and go connect with them.
Yeah. No, I think I've said this to a few people that I've kind of mentored. It's knowing what a story is like. And that's why I read so much, because if you read a lot, and it's not just reading books, sure. But like, if you read news articles, which we all should, because we're comms people, you start to figure out like, oh, the way they set this, that's a story. The way they position things, the way certain opinions about something follow an actual quote from someone that's talking about the subject matter. And then it just starts to turn in your head and you're like, oh my God, that's actually a beautiful story. You're a little bit crazy when you can start to read articles, you can kind of envision what that pitch looks like from that PR person.
And we strategists do that quite a bit. They see a great ad and they try to break that down and understand what the strategy is. It's a really great exercise for strategists. Maybe that's something that comms professionals should start doing is read an article, try to reverse engineer and understand maybe what went into that pitch.
Yeah, 100%. I think it was the Martin Agency a few years back. They did a campaign with Gap about inclusivity. And it might have ran in Vogue, I think. It was some big fashion. It was some big fashion publication. And I remember reading it and I was like, okay, how the hell did the Martin Agency get this story into this publication? Because the campaign was a part of the article, but it wasn't the focus of the article. And I was like, damn, whoever wrote this is so good, because they got it in there, but they probably didn't come full steam ahead. Like, hey, we got a new campaign. There's the 40, here's the 15. It's like, okay. Like that's very off-putting to a journalist that doesn't work with advertising agencies.
Vogue want to cover a campaign Gap made? Well, we should get that person on. I think that'd be fun to back. But sometimes, I mean, you can make the argument as well. And sometimes work is just so culturally relevant, right? You can hit a home run and the pitch comes easy, right? If the work, if you're at the Wydens, if you're at Mothers, you're at Havas's or whatever it might be, like good agencies that create really impactful work will get covered. Like we saw it with Solo Stove. I mean, that went off. But there's no excuse for us not to learn how to tell that story from a journalist perspective and try to contribute to that story. I think there's no excuse for us to try.
Yeah, I want to run something by you, because I've been thinking about this since the last time we talked, and it's just something that I can't stop thinking about it. So we obviously know there's been like a mass exodus across journalism, right? Publications slashing staff. It is what it is. And we also know that a lot of people don't read. There's no statistics on this, but a lot of people on the daily do not read. They go on their social media platforms.
Read the headlines.
Yeah, they'll read the headline if they see it, but for the most part, people are watching. And I've never once watched a news story, because I don't watch broadcast like news like that. I just like to watch the news. But I'm thinking, I wonder if the evolution of journalism is actually kind of making bite-size like social first news, where it's actually like engaging. Like, my wife loves to follow the Shade Room on Instagram, and they always make they make these pretty cool pictures where it'll be like the actual focus, the person, the celebrity, and they'll have some text on the right side. But I'm like, what if that is like the start of what I'm thinking? If that's how you get people to start taking interest in reading news again, because what we've been doing is just like, oh, well, no one's really going to our publications anymore. It's like, yeah, because most people aren't on a freaking desktop. And then when they are on their phone,
yeah,
influencers are going to be like the first. That's usually influencers, memes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start to kind of change the way we go about, I guess the way journalism goes about doing its practice, I think there's something there. I think there's definitely something there.
I mean, I get a lot of my news from social media, as crazy as that sounds, but mm-hmm. from these verified sources, like even Ad Age and Ad Week, they post their headlines. Mm-hmm. They'll do a short clip and they'll do a carousel of the best ads and their coverage. And then you go read more. But sometimes for the, like most people, they'll just read the headline and they'll get the news out of it. Like, country singer just died like 2 days ago. I forgot his name. Toby Keith just died. Yeah. And I'm like, well, now I know that. I'm sad. I mean,
yeah,
but I got that from social media. I'm just thinking of that.
Yeah.
I just got on that train, but yeah, I think there is something to be said about that. And then there's also now comms professionals in our industry that are also identifying the need to be social first. And instead of even pitching in the traditional ways, they're just posting on social media about the work. And I think that's interesting too. Yeah.
I heard something about like, it was an article, it might've been in Business Insider, about like TikTok news influencers, which is, I don't know
what that means.
It's very interesting.
So now I'm like Philip DeFranco has been doing that for like 15, 20 years, I'm assuming, is YouTube videos of covering the news. And that's like a big thing.
Yeah. So I'm always interested in like, why do we keep doing things certain ways when we should just kind of not? I don't like to do anything like most people. My wife would laugh because I always go against the grain, but I just think there's something there. I also wish, and this is to the meme account holders that are listening, I wish you would respond to my emails when I send you some social, when I send you some social assets that would be,
are you not DMing them?
I in the past I've DM'd them through like agency Instagram, but they usually have emails and I'll be like, yo, like you can do whatever you want with this content.
It's yours.
You know, like, but you know, I think that's sometimes agencies make dope stuff that should be on like meme accounts, but the meme person or whoever runs the account doesn't see the vision. I'm like, there's something here, dude. Like I'm going to figure it out, but there's something there. It's so close. Like brand content is so close to just meme culture. It's right there. It's just a matter of kind of cracking the puzzle of like, okay, so what makes this actually 100% enticing for you to want to post on?
Right. Cause they have so many, I talk about like community and like, I know my meme accounts. I love my meme accounts for my specific comedy style and it shows up on my explore page and similar people. Right. So if you can kind of tap into that like micro community, then brands will win. It's so important.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll start seeing advertising, like, you know, like creatives when they are going to launch a campaign, actually like, which would be really interesting to dissect what the campaign is and then start to make memes off of that. Cause I'm trying to think of like Ice Spice and, what's that guy's name? Ben Affleck. They did that Dunkin' Donuts campaign last year. That I watched the spot and I was like, I forgot who made it. Shout out to whoever made it. But I was like, oh, this is cool. And then it got turned into a meme within like a week. Like Ben Affleck's face was a meme. And I was like, that's when you know something can turn into a meme. It would be a lot cooler if the advertising agency and the brand were like, oh, wait, we should capitalize on this because this is ours. This is our IP. This should be us. Don't let some rando kid be like, hey, look at this dumb face. And then it's meme. Like,
you're saying if we can prime it and like own that narrative ahead of time and build some assets within the toolkit when you send stuff out, there should be
what does that look like? Right. It's like,
I think that takes some comms planning too. It's like to identify what the right, like in, like, I guess social communities, whether it's memes or influencers, identifying those people and then maybe custom making it for them too, or like for their content.
We have the resources, right? I mean, I'm sure whoever is running the, be it influencers, be it like meme account, whatever that kind of social content is, they have video editors, right? So what if we were, if they would be more willing to talk, what if it's like, yeah, we'll make, what do you want to make of this? We'll make it and we'll give it to you. And like,
yeah, that's a dream.
Yeah. It's that it keeps me up at night, man. I wish it doesn't, but I want to like crack the code on a lot of things.
I like that. Well, I'm learning a lot. I think other things that go into this job, like for me, you know, social media, like for me, I have to do social media and I'm trash at it. Monitoring the social media, like that should be its own full-time role, I feel like. In some places it is, but if you go into comms, you will most likely have the logins on your phone. You will have to do the stories internally, which are fun. I have to tap some help sometimes and it's difficult. I don't think you should lead with it, but to build up those like Canva, Photoshop, Illustrator skills, maybe at least Canva pretty well, where you can work your way around it. Super helpful, goes a long way, because people are busy and they're working on 2-3 clients at a time, one client, two clients at a time. So just be aware of that. I would love to have my like, okay, I have a good question for you. If you had the budget on your team and you were in charge for your comms team, what type of role would you add to your team to report and work directly with your team? If you were the manager, like what type of video?
The videographer.
Why?
100%. Just to kind of make that kind of bespoke agency content, like the cool, like just, hey, like when you think about like YouTubers that vlog,
Gary Vee does. Right, I mean, like it's crazy. Yeah. I was thinking about that earlier today. Like I think this agency, any agency, like we just had a content creator following us around all the time. It'd be awesome.
Great.
And like showcasing the culture internally and just having interviews and nonstop editing content. Like that was their day-to-day job.
That'd be the first thing. That and a photographer. That's two things you need. Like that's all I would want. Cause then it's like, okay, we can start making whatever we want. That's the thing too. Like sometimes when agencies have social media platforms, like some agencies have TikToks, they're doing what they're doing with the intentions of hoping it like pops on social, where it's like if you were just being a human and you just happen to have a videographer, but you weren't like forcing the fact that like, oh, there's a camera in front of me, I need to like perform. We would see way different content from agencies. It'd be dope. It'd be dope stuff to see, but
it's all tailored. It's all kind of like, I think that's a good one.
That's not social media. There's a reason why people usually don't follow like businesses on social, because usually they're always like, oh, this is way too tailored. I want to see the person that just dropped their coffee and the agency started screaming boo. Because those are like people I want to be friends with, because like, oh yeah, I do that to my friends. Like that's being a human.
But videographer would be amazing, somebody that can edit that too, and like, oh yeah, that would be dope for me.
That
I think that might be it, actually. I was gonna say like just a pure graphic designer, 100%. All the way. I think that would be my number two then. Somebody that can help me build just absurd content that's super fun. And I wouldn't have to worry about like wasting like art director's time, because their time is valuable. I get that. And there's sometimes that they have to do it. Like I get approvals and like, we have to work on this. We have to launch this social asset. But yeah, that would be cool too.
I take a graphic designer too. I think that'd be dope. It goes back to my point of like, then we could make memes.
All that vision that you, whatever you think of the day, like whether it's your, yeah, You could do what, literally, you can wake up and like, well, I know today I'm going to create 10 to 20 things that I can post on social.
Yeah.
And I could post them all, you know.
And agencies are always like, what? There's always that talk of like, especially when I've seen it before, like monetization, right? Like, what outside of client billings, how can agencies make money? Dude, what if I'm some of these, you know, some of these meme accounts or whatever, the content accounts, they're making,
and they can bring in new business too. Mm-hmm. Like, if you point, exactly, like, look, we actually have, like, we can talk about influencers, but we are influencers. We have 50 yeah. million followers alone, just off our two people here. And then you, if you actually yeah. kind of tailor it to get somebody well known, and you kind of like, whether it's your president, kind of like the Gary V thing, if they're in a pitch and Gary V walks in at VaynerMedia or VaynerX, whatever it's called, they're going to be like, oh, we know him. He's famous. Like, mm-hmm. we're going to want to work with him.
Yeah.
And they do that, and they should. So yeah. you can also like kind of gear that to some thought leadership too, which people are so like, people are so confused on how to do thought leadership. And I think we talked about this last time. I think writers are really good at it. If your president is a writing background, they're going to write blogs all day on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. I always tell my team, because everyone, I think we sometimes have like this weird copy culture, you know, like, well, so-and-so posted the LinkedIn post that was like two sentences and it got 1,000 likes, and they're like, I want to be able to do that. And it's like, okay, but they're talking about what everyone else is talking about. And I always tell, I've said this since I've kind of got on the agency side, is like, what do you think about something? Like, it doesn't need to be about advertising. What do you think about life? Do you think that certain things are weird? Do you think that certain things shouldn't be the way they are? Because if it annoys the shit out of you, that's usually going to make for a great op-ed, because you're actually going to be writing from a place of like,
passion.
I want to solve this weird yeah. problem, you know, like, and that's usually where we start. I mean, we had a Simon, one of our ECDs, he wrote an op-ed about how like culture is not free, right? Like, if you want a great company culture, you have to give up a part of yourself, that like, you can't just be so selfish. You can't just say, well, I want to work remote 5 days a week. And it's like, okay, so if you feel like you're disconnected to your coworkers, that's because you don't want to make the sacrifice to be there with your coworkers. Like, and it was a great op-ed. We placed it in Fast Company, and Fast Company was like, oh, we like it. And I was like, oh, interesting. Like, I wonder if this is because we're not trying to talk like everyone else. We're just trying to this is our observation, and this is the op-ed that we're going to write. If more people did that, it'd be beautiful. Just like, be more human. And like, as comms people, you should be steering your executives to be human. If you're at like a publicly traded sure. company,
financially, yeah.
Not,
we're talking yeah, about ads. There's
financial loss at stake. Yeah. But if you're at an ad shop and you guys are chill, just be human and find like those human things, because people are going to want to read that. We're not robots yet. So I love when I see people just being honest, and I'm like, oh yeah, I think about that all the time. That's crazy. Yeah.
All right. I'm getting pretty tired here. Ty, how you feeling? I feel like we covered a lot of good grounds though.
Yeah. Yeah. This is fun.
I think anybody that listened all the way through, this is going to get some really good advice, and they're going to get a really clear picture on what it looks like, you know, high level, and kind of gives us some good methods, some rants we got out for the comms world specifically within an agency, how to do it. And that's why I like this kind of segment here. It's deeper. It could be super long. It could be 10 minutes of me just talking. So I'm glad you were the first one on, and I've seen you. You know, you've been vocal on LinkedIn. That's where I'm at. So I recognize you, and I saw you, and we've connected. So, you know,
yeah,
we could be friends and like help each other out, rant whenever. And if anybody else is listening and breaks in the comms world, reach out to us. We all got to kind of stick together, because eventually, you know, we'll probably hop around shops eventually, maybe work together, or, you know, help each other out. Like, yeah. if my boss says no to an opportunity, I could toss it your way. Like, I don't see
any- yeah. I've done that in the past. That's a thing. Like, some people are way too protective, but I've actually given other shops,
yeah,
like common opportunities, because I'm like, oh, I don't have anyone.
And sometimes they don't respond. Like, sometimes executives don't respond. And you're like, all right, well, try this other agency. Okay. Like, they'll take it then. We got to help each other out.
Just be a good human. just be a consumer. It helps a lot.
Cool, dog. I appreciate you. How can people reach out to you?
Thank you for the. All I got is LinkedIn. I don't have any social media platforms, so yeah, it's strictly LinkedIn. I'm on it all the time.
All right, Ty. Great job again. You rock.